merchandise nor selling divert from the remembrance of Allah and the keeping up of prayer and the giving of charity. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam says, quoting from the words of wisdom revealed to past prophets, he says, an intelligent Muslim should not be seen passing away his time except in three things. Basically, you should not waste your time except in three things. Number one, improving his livelihood. Number two, preparing for the hereafter. Whatever you do, you have the intention of akhirah. Even when you brush your teeth, even if you reach the moon with a rocket, you, whatever you do, even when you're building or drawing a house, if you're an architect, whatever you do, you have akhirah in your mind. And number three, the Imam says, enjoying himself, but not in haram ways, but halal ways. In another hadith, Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam, the seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam, this pious servant of Allah says, try that your daily time is divided into four segments. Number one, a time for meditation to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so that you could improve your spirituality, your serenity. When you improve your spirituality, you have actually improved your serenity and your inner peace. Number two, a time for earning livelihood. Number three, a time for socializing with brethren and trustworthy friends who would point out your moral weaknesses and be sincere in their friendship for you. And number four, a time exclusively devoted for non-haram pleasure with the family. It is with this fourth time segment that you will be able to maintain or master the other three times. That is very important. The fourth segment, the time you spend with your family, is the one that you would be able to maintain or master the other three times. The last segment of time is very important. There is an analysis by someone called Richard Esterlin, an economist at the University of Southern California, who said we should apply our time and energy to health and family life rather than to material goods if we really want to be happy. So the hadith and researchers from Western scientists say both the same thing, that if you are in the pursuit of happiness, if you are in the quest of happiness, if you are searching for happiness, real happiness, you should spend more time and invest more in your family. That's all for this time. I hope that you enjoyed the program For a Better Life here on IRIB English Radio. Until next time, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us all a prosperous life and a joyful life. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I
need. All I need.
Your love is all I need.
Oh, 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 oh.
Your love is all I need. To be all
I need.
And I know that you see how much you need. You need to me,
'cause your love is all I need.
To be all I can
be,
and I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
around the world with reporters.
People have gathered here in Kabul to pay respect to the bravery and the leading role of two significant figures against invading forces and foreign-backed terrorists, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Afghanistan's national hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and our national hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud, were close friends and comrades in the region. Their sacrifices have not been fully highlighted yet, so we need to know them more than ever.
Given the fact that Afghanistan has been repeatedly invaded by some superpowers, mainly over the past two centuries, resistance is considered a familiar concept among the nation. Afghans have had some top resistance leaders like Ahmad Shah Massoud, a national hero who became the victim of a terrorist attack back in 2001. His characteristics are very much similar to that of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani in the eyes of Afghans.
The U.S. expected to remove the name of Qasem Soleimani from the minds of resisting nations by assassinating him. But contrary to those expectations, he became a popular hero, not only for Iranians, but also for all resistance nations across the world, just like Massoud.
Afghans and Iranians share many commonalities in terms of history, culture, religion, and security. Many people here in Afghanistan believe that one of the major similarities between these two nations is their resisting spirit against the invaders. This event in Afghanistan marks the memories of two well-known resistance leaders, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Afghanistan's national hero Ahmad Shah Massoud. This comes as Afghans themselves are suffering from terrorism and are seeking to follow the path of these two heroes. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
A year has passed since millions of Iranians attended the funeral service of slain Iranian military figure General Soleimani. Now, on the first anniversary of his assassination by the U.S., his fellow citizens in Kerman have once again come to his burial place to pay respect to him. Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He was killed in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from U.S. President Donald Trump.
We strongly demand that the Islamic Republic take harsh revenge. This is the demand made by all Iranians who owe their security to the efforts of General Soleimani in the fight against the terrorists.
General Soleimani is well known as the nemesis of the terrorists in the region. He played a key role in dismantling Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017 and helped liberate major areas in Syria from the terror group. That's what makes everyone question the U.S.'s drive behind his assassination.
General Soleimani brought the U.S. to its knees in the region. The U.S. sought to trigger chaos in our region by creating Daesh, but General Soleimani helped unite the people of the region and foiled Washington's attempts by defeating Daesh.
Following Soleimani's assassination, massive crowds of people in Iraq took part in his funeral service to pay respect to him. This was followed by million-strong processions in Iran, the last of which was held in his hometown before he was laid to rest. Tehran regards General Soleimani as the architect of U.S.'s defeat in the region. His role in dislodging Daesh terrorists won him huge support and popularity, not only among Iranians, but among the people of Syria and Iraq, who say his assassination created a united front against the U.S. Yusuf Jalali, Kerman.
Iran has marked the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Iraq's PMU commander Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes. The ceremony was attended by a small group of people from all walks of life and senior officials due to anti-COVID health protocols. Addressing the ceremony, Iran's judiciary chief Ayatollah Raisi has warned the enemies should await Iran's harsh revenge for the killing of Iran's top general Qasem Soleimani. Ayatollah Raisi also said the assassination of anti-terror commander Soleimani will fail to undermine the resistance front.
By assassinating the hero of the fight against terrorism in the region and the world, the creators of Daesh and Al-Qaeda imagined that the resistance front would become weak. But they are wrong. The resistance front will never lose strength. The assassination of General Soleimani has injected fresh energy into the spirit of resistance among people of the region.
Moreover, head of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, Brigadier General Ismail Ba'ani, said Soleimani was the hero of defeating arrogance.
General Soleimani was the man of resistance and logic. His path will continue. Those who assassinated him should be prepared for harsh revenge. General Soleimani was the hero of defeating arrogance. He is the hero of the Iranian nation and a hero of the Islamic Ummah.
A number of foreign dignitaries, including senior officials from Islamic Jihad, Iraq's Hashd al-Shaabi, and Lebanese Hezbollah, as well as Yemeni ambassador, were among the participants at this event, who talked about different aspects of the personality of General Qasem Soleimani. One of the foreign dignitaries who attended the ceremony was Hashem Safieddin, senior official of Lebanese Hezbollah, who said the resistance movement should continue the path of Soleimani. He also noted General Soleimani and assassinated Iraqi commander Abu Mehdi al-Muhandas protected the world against the Daesh terror group.
Hajj Qasem Soleimani was a peaceful man because he became a general. He has been fighting for everyone. He has been fighting for humanity. Such people, we need them. Such people, there are few in this world.
General Qasem Soleimani was a man of resistance. His behavior and his beliefs taught the lesson of life. To all freedom seekers, he is a role model. He was a symbol of the fight against oppression. His name will remain in history forever.
General Soleimani, former commander of the IRGC Quds Force, was killed in a U.S. drone attack in Iraq on January the 3rd, 2020.
On the first martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, senior Iranian officials have once again vowed to bring to justice the main perpetrators of his assassination in due time. According to Iranian officials, a lawsuit which has been filed in Iran against the U.S. for assassinating General Qasem Soleimani is in its final stage. And soon, a court session will be held in this regard. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
After dozens of civilians, including Ghadi's government officials, were killed and injured in the attack on Aden Airport, the deputy head of the Emirati-backed Southern Transitional Council, Hani bin Barak, accused Qatar and Turkey of being behind it, ruling out that Sana'a was involved in it.
It's clear who's behind this latest attack in Aden Airport is the one who benefited the most from this attack, and is United Arab Emirates. United Arab Emirates and its forces in Aden, because United Arab Emirates doesn't want to be there a government which can actually express the term Yemen, or which can actually be in Aden. That's why United Arab Emirates, they want south of Yemen to be divided, all Yemen to be divided, so the United Arab Emirates can control Bab al-Mandab and the Bab al-Mandab Strait, and as well control Socotra Island. And
videos that went viral on social media showed that the missiles were launched from inside the Green City in Aden, which made observers accuse the SDC of seeking to push back Hadi's government to Riyadh hotels and fail the Riyadh agreement.
The Riyadh agreement implemented its objectives regarding the main interests of the Saudi and Emirati occupation authorities. Therefore, the Riyadh agreement formed this government to require it to implement the surrender of Yemeni sovereignty and not to administer any land controlled by the occupation forces.
The deputy head of SDC had preempted the arrival of the new Hadi government with a campaign to raise the flags of South Yemen in private and public facilities, including Aden International Airport, and he also warned members of the Hadi government not to talk about Yemeni unity, which confirmed the continuing tension between the two parties to the conflict in southern Yemen.
There is no place for Hadi and his government in Aden. This is the message that the attack on the airport carried, meaning that Aden will continue to suffer under the rule of the militias of the UAE-backed SDC. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
We're back in the eye of the storm. These were the words of Simon Stevens, the head of Britain's National Health Service, as more people are in hospital with COVID-19 now than at the peak of the first wave earlier this year. Authorities are blaming the soaring infection rates on a new, more transmissible variant of the virus, first identified in Southeast England. Dr. Katie Sanderson of the Doctors Association has warned that the strain on hospitals is only going to get worse.
The volume of sick patients coming in with coronavirus is verging on unmanageable, just in terms of ambulance capacity, A&E capacity and bed capacity. We haven't seen the patients who had coronavirus infections that they've contracted over Christmas yet, because they're probably not sick enough to come to hospital yet.
Ambulances with infected patients have been forced to wait outside hospitals as capacity is overstretched. Many more infected individuals are forced to wait at home as ambulances are unable to meet the demands on the system.
This is something that we've just never experienced before. Control room staff are having to make incredibly difficult decisions to decide who gets an ambulance and in what order, quite often with huge numbers of people waiting for ambulances and they have nobody left to send.
A growing number of National Health Service staff are also off work because they are self-isolating or have become sick with the virus. Officials are now considering tightening coronavirus restrictions, with some suggesting a total nationwide lockdown to halt the spread of the new strain. Britain has recorded more than 71,000 confirmed coronavirus deaths, although some question the accuracy of the numbers when compared to mortality rates from previous years before the pandemic. According to the Office of National Statistics, the spike in fatalities for this year remains significantly higher than the government's official record of COVID fatalities.
This year will forever be remembered for the spread of COVID-19, but another, arguably more dangerous disease has spread rapidly too. Hate. More specifically, hate against Muslims. Some of the most obvious examples can be seen in France, with the French President Emmanuel Macron pushing through anti-Islam legislation to prevent so-called Islamic separatism. In a later speech, the president condemned Islam as a religion in crisis, which radicalizes citizens.
Mais je demande à tout citoyen, quelle que soit sa religion.
And there is, in this radical Islam, since this is what the issue is, let's take it on board and let's name it. There is a will, a demand, an organized method to go against the laws of the Republic and create a parallel order based on the other values. Developing a separatist society first off with the goal of ultimately taking total control, and that's what they are doing, gradually, by rejecting the freedom of expression and freedom of thought.
Tensions in France additionally increased when the state publicly began defending insulting caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad. The row spilled over into violence with attacks against journalists on the 25th of September, a teacher beheaded by a lone wolf Takfiri on the 16th of October, and then on the 18th, two Muslim women wearing hijab were viciously stabbed by attackers screaming, "You dirty Arabs." Outside of France, things aren't much better, with numerous incidents of far-right Quran-burning protests occurring across Scandinavia. Between November 2019 and October 2020, at least four notorious Quran desecration rallies have been allowed, despite the fact that these protests offend millions. The Norwegian Prime Minister even publicly defended Islamophobes' rights to desecrate this holy book back in August. Then there is the Islamophobic ban on the Muslim niqab, a policy enforced by many countries, despite the fact that covering your face has been proven to save lives. Austria has also jumped on the bandwagon, punishing all Muslims for the acts of a small minority of criminals, introducing new laws intended to gag Muslims' freedom of speech.
In the fight against political Islam, the ideological basis behind it, we are going to create a criminal offense called political Islam, in order to be able to move against those who aren't terrorists, but are preparing the ground for it.
Across the English Channel, a new conspiracy has been widely circulating, claiming that Muslims are somehow responsible for spreading the coronavirus. These ideas are not supported by any facts. However, the belief was so widespread it had to be debunked by a government fact-checker website. These are just a few examples, but studies suggest that Islamophobia is present at nearly all levels of society, vaccines are being produced to stop COVID-19, but what is being done to defeat racism against Muslims?
Protests in Pakistan against Israel over its unending atrocities in occupied Palestine has not been so unusual. People in Pakistan have traditionally supported Palestinians in their struggle against Israel since 1948, when Israel killed and expelled Palestinians in a mass number and occupied their land. Many here rally behind leaders beyond Pakistan's borders over their support for Palestinians. One such leader is Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, a top Iranian commander who resisted against Israel and backed Palestinians at a time when many Arab rulers not only abandoned Palestinians but also collaborated with Israel to suppress them. That is why many took to the streets in Pakistan after a U.S. drone assassinated General Soleimani in Iraq 1 year ago. Being victims of so-called war on terror, Pakistanis view the U.S. and its allies in a negative shade. Anti-U.S. and anti-Israel sentiments have been high in Pakistan for decades. So are some of the Arab rulers who have been under fire for normalizing their ties with Israel at the expense of the sufferings of the Palestinian people. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
After dozens of civilians, including Ghadi's government officials, were killed and injured in the attack on Aden Airport, the deputy head of the Emirati-backed Southern Transitional Council, Hani bin Barak, accused Qatar and Turkey of being behind it, ruling out that Sana'a was involved in it.
It's clear who's behind this latest attack in Aden Airport is the one who benefited the most from this attack, and is United Arab Emirates. United Arab Emirates and its forces in Aden, because United Arab Emirates doesn't want to be there a government which can actually express the term Yemen, or which can actually be in Aden. That's why United Arab Emirates, they want south of Yemen to be divided, all Yemen to be divided, so the United Arab Emirates can control Bab al-Mandab and the Bab al-Mandab Strait, and as well control Socotra Island. And
videos that went viral on social media showed that the missiles were launched from inside the Green City in Aden, which made observers accuse the SDC of seeking to push back Hadi's government to Riyadh hotels and fail the Riyadh agreement. The deputy head of SDC had preempted the arrival of the new Hadi government with a campaign to raise the flags of South Yemen in private and public facilities, including Aden International Airport, and he also warned members of the Hadi government not to talk about Yemeni unity, which confirms the continuing tension between the two parties to the conflict in southern Yemen.
There is no place for Hadi and his government in Aden. This is the message that the attack on the airport carried, meaning that Aden will continue to suffer under the rule of the militias of the UAE-backed SDC. Abdul Latif Al-Washalib, Sana'a.
These days, Lebanon is hosting various events marking the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. This book reads, "The Man Who Vanquished America," will be out in bookstores on the martyrdom anniversary on January 3rd. The author tells Press TV he started writing after the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani in January 2020, and the main inspiration for him was the personality of the man who changed the region and even the world.
This man is the man, in terms of strategy, is the man of the century. The United States could not beat him. On the contrary, he defeated the United States in many posts, in many positions, in many places, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Iran, and in Syria, in Lebanon, in Yemen, in Palestine. So he outsmarted them.
One of the main discernments of deep study of the assassination of General Soleimani was that the will of the resistance will be more adamant on removing the U.S. hegemonic presence from the region.
Achieved nothing. They killed the freedom in their mind when they killed Haj Qasim Sulaiman. They killed justice in their mind and in their people when they killed Haj Qasim Sulaiman. On the contrary, Haj Qasim Sulaimani now is living in every person or a thinker who think that Haj Qasim Sulaimani represents such slogans, freedom, justice, and liberty.
U.S. Army generals and strategists, as well as those who grieved him, agree that the commander of the Quds force brought the people of West Asia together and made the cause of fighting U.S. oppression a united struggle. Other virtual events to commemorate the memory of the Iranian commander were held by a group of activists in the form of Lebanese traditional storytelling. Through this art form, the writers tried to narrate to the people of Lebanon the story of Commander Qasim Soleimani and his significant role in thwarting U.S. plots.
The biggest shock was when the U.S. Army General Petraeus read a message which read, "I am Qasim Soleimani, the commander of Al-Quds forces. I am the one who conducts the Iranian policies in Iraq, Afghanistan, Gaza, and the entire region. And the Iranian ambassador in Iran is a member of the Quds force."
Many in the region who knew General Qasim Soleimani or learned about him after his martyrdom say they have no doubt that his martyrdom and the deeds done during his lifetime will lead to a complete liberation of the region. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
General Qasim Soleimani was a high-ranking Iranian military official whose popularity began to rise after he led the war on Daesh terrorists on the battlefields in Syria and Iraq. General Qasim Soleimani was the commander of Iran's Quds Force, the foreign arm of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. He was of great help to Syria as an advisor and organizer of Syrian troops when Daesh and other Takfiri terrorists launched a bloody assault on Syria in 2011. He also played a key role in creating Iraq's Popular Mobilization Unit, also known as Hashd al-Shaabi, in 2014, when Daesh declared its caliphate in Iraq and overran several provinces there. Hashd al-Shaabi later managed to defeat Daesh and drive the terrorist group out of Iraq. These victories for Syrian and Iraqi forces further increased General Soleimani's popularity among the Iraqis, Syrians, and Iranians. When General Soleimani declared the end of the Daesh Caliphate in 2018, the United States, which called itself the savior of the Iraqi and Syrian people, described him as its arch enemy and an obstacle to peace in the Middle East. The U.S. imposed sanctions on Soleimani. The Israeli regime also put Soleimani on its so-called terror list. In the year 2020, the assassination of General Soleimani and Hashd al-Shaabi's commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in a U.S. drone strike raises a key question. Was the United States really fighting Daesh? Or as U.S. President Donald Trump himself has said, was Daesh created by his predecessor Barack Obama? Perhaps now it would be easier to answer this question after the assassination of General Soleimani. What is clear is that the United States has killed a man who played the biggest role in both eliminating Daesh from the region and isolating Washington. Following this terrorist attack and the martyrdom of a group of people who had fought Daesh and other Takfiri terrorists round the clock, the question is, who really wants peace and stability in the region? And who is after igniting a war to plunder the Middle East?
In the limelight. The article you're about to hear has been written by Caroline Gramlin. Caroline Gramlin is a writer on earth, environment, and climate. The piece is titled Wildfires, Heat Waves and Hurricanes Broke All Kinds of Records in 2020. Stay with us for more of Carolyn Gramlin's article. was a year of unremitting extreme climate events, from heat waves to wildfires to hurricanes, many of which scientists have directly linked to human-caused climate change. Each event has taken a huge toll in terms of lives lost and damage incurred. As of early October, the United States alone had weathered at least 16 climate or weather-related disasters, each costing more than $1 billion. The price tags of the late-season hurricanes Delta, Zeta and Eta could push the final 2020 tally of such expensive disasters even higher, setting a new record. With the COVID-19 pandemic dominating the news, some of these events may have already faded into memory. And now we take a look at this year of climate extremes. The bushfires that burned southeastern Australia between July of 2019 and March of 2020 scorched roughly 11 million hectares of land and killed dozens of people. Climate change made those devastating fires at least 30% more likely to occur. The primary reason, a prolonged and severe heat wave that baked the country in 2019 and 2020. Which itself was exacerbated by climate change. The intensity of Australia's wildfires produced some striking sights. A particularly intense wildfire led to the formation of towering pyrocumulonimbus clouds that launched hundreds of thousands of metric tons of smoke into the stratosphere. One massive plume of smoke, wrapped in rotating winds, ascended to a record 31 kilometers in the atmosphere, deep into the Earth's protective ozone layer. Although it's not clear what chemical scars is left, such a large smoke plume has the potential to trigger chemical reactions that destroy the ozone layer. Record-setting wildfires in western United States also produce images of raging blazes, orange skies, destroyed homes, neighborhoods enveloped in acrid smoke. By mid-November, more than 9,200 wildfires in California had burnt about 1.7 million hectares of land, more than double the acreage burnt in 2018, the state's previous record fire year. Meanwhile, Colorado battled three of the largest wildfires in the state's history. Combined, those fires burnt more than 219,000 hectares of land. The role of climate change in these blazes is multi-pronged. From California to Colorado, rising temperatures due to climate change have led to earlier spring snow melting, resulting in drier vegetation by summer. In California, that extremely dry vegetation combined with a record-breaking heat wave primed the landscape for runaway wildfires. Climate change is increasing the frequency of extreme climate conditions. California's average heat and dryness in both summer and autumn have become more severe, dramatically increasing the number of days each year prone to extreme fire weather conditions. Simulations of future climate change project increasing dryness over at least the next few decades, which means 2020's fire records aren't likely to stand for long. In the meantime, for January through to July, Siberia was in the grips of a powerful heat wave that led to record-breaking temperatures and thawing permafrost. Such a heat wave in Siberia, with temperatures as high as 38 degrees Celsius, about 100 degrees Fahrenheit, would have been impossible without climate change. human influence made the heat wave at least 600 times as likely, and possibly as much as 99,000 times as likely, according to scientific reports. Moreover, the carbon dioxide churned into the atmosphere by this year's Arctic wildfires also smashed the previous record for the region set in 2019. That carbon dioxide can beget further warming, and the fires can also speed up permafrost thaw, which could add more of another greenhouse gas, methane, to the atmosphere. This year also saw the second lowest extent of Arctic sea ice on record. Meanwhile, a roughly Manhattan-sized chunk of Canada's Mjøen ice shelf, close to half of what had been the country's last intact ice shelf, suddenly collapsed into the Arctic Ocean in August of this year, carrying an ice observing station away with it. As early as April of this year, scientists predicted that the Atlantic hurricane season, which lasts from 1st of June through to 30th of November, would be busy, with about 18 named storms, compared with an average of 12 each year. By August, scientists upped their predictions to as many as 25. But 2020 surpassed even those expectations. By mid-November, there were 30 named storms, eclipsing a record set back in 2005. It's difficult to link climate change to the number of storms that form in a given year. Very warm ocean waters, such as in the Atlantic Ocean this year, foster tropical cyclone formation. It's true that those warm waters are linked to climate change, as the surface ocean swallows up excess heat from the atmosphere. But other factors are also involved in hurricane formation, including wind conditions, making it difficult to establish a definite link. But there are established links between warming oceans and increasing hurricane intensity, as well as rainfall. Warm Atlantic Ocean waters gave a boost to the intense storms of the 2017 hurricane season, for example. The warm waters can also provide enough energy to give hurricanes extra staying power even after landfall. And as the world saw in 2020, very warm ocean waters can also speed up how quickly a storm strengthens, leading to dangerous, difficult to predict, suddenly supercharged storms. Such rapid intensification is defined as sustained wind speeds increasing by at least 55 kilometers per hour within just 24 hours. 2020 saw that in abundance, with 10 Atlantic storms rapidly intensifying in the region's bath-like waters before making landfall.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we're going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise their children Islamically. The main source is the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. And we have in our studio guest speaker, Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qum. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the program, Sister Salma.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for being here. So in our previous episode, we were talking about common mistakes that parents make when bringing up their child. And we have been talking about the mistakes. And the last mistake we talked about was lack of family time and communication, which is something very crucial and unfortunately, you know, is not given so much attention to. So please tell us more.
One of the other mistakes that I'd like to mention is that Islamic home setting should be there. Mm-hmm. Parents lose out on that sometimes. They feel that children will learn Islam anyway, especially if they're living in the countries that have Islamic schools. Even if they're Western countries, some do send their children to Islamic schools, right? Or Islamic countries, they feel that there's no need to. So, you know, like, not much emphasis is laid in our day-to-day lifestyles to act Islamically. First of all, when we start talking also, we don't involve Allah and the Ahlul Bayt in our talks.
Yeah.
That's the main thing that makes children feel that there's all material and money and wealth and things that are supposed to be attended to in life. Material aspect is given much importance. What did you wear? What new clothes am I supposed to get? Or what new books? Or what toys do I need? Or what games am I playing? Or who is coming? Or what food have you made?
Yeah.
All these things are material aspects, right? Mm-hmm. Have we involved Allah and Ahlul Bayt in our talks daily? That's very important for Islamic home setting, for children to know. And I've noticed that in the West also, when there were no Western schools and people went to settle there, when they started getting concerned about their children's future,
yeah,
they started doing more of these activities, you know, Islamic activities at home. Such children turned out to be very great. And they are now leaders of their own communities.
Mm, very true.
Because they had this Islam in their home, the home setting environment. Even if the outside world is not like that, the home setting is the first social arena to inculcate these kind of good habits, the Islamic habits. So talk about Allah and the Ahlul Bayt more, get them involved more, you know, like azadari and, for example, a happy occasion, for example, birthday of our imams, our infallible leaders, things like that should be actually, you know, zoomed.
Exactly.
That today is, for example, the birthday of Hazrat Zainab, salamullahi alayha.
Yeah,
it's
we
a
can
very
do like
happy
a
occasion.
Party or, you know, hold a session, go, especially like in
make
this
a cake
of, yeah,
make them feel that this is part of our life, these personalities are part of our lives, right?
And I think in this, especially in this time of corona, I think the families have started to miss out. They feel like they miss these kind of programs because they bring so much togetherness. This remembrance of these kind of infallibles is so important. It's like it brings you, it wakens you. I also used to feel like when I'd come to Iran and I used to see in these, like when Nowruz, the new year of the calendar, the Iranian calendar, I would see that most of the Iranians would go to the harams or to the imamzades, the grandchildren of the imams. And it was so surprising because I would feel like it's like they want to celebrate their start of their year with, you know, the imams. And the,
yeah,
it's something so beautiful. It's like, as Muslims, it naturally comes, it's from us, it's within us. We want to, you know, have this kind of an appreciation to them and all.
Yeah. And it starts with the Islamic setup at home.
Yeah, exactly.
If that is not done, and movies are given importance to what you watched, what cinema you, what you wore, where you went, what parks or restaurants did you go, the child will, his head will revolve around those kind of things as his main, you know, like duties or maybe main pastimes.
Exactly.
Instead of looking at the actual beauty of life, and that is to involve Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and Ahlul Bayt in your day-to-day activities, in everything that you do.
Thank you very much. We're just going to take a short break, and after the break, we're going to continue this discussion. Please stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
So you're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing. You were talking about how it is important for families to keep an Islamic home setting, you know, at home.
Yeah, and this involves also sometimes parents make this mistake of lack of monitoring their children.
Yeah.
And then what happens is that they choose their own things to play, and instead of us watching them over of what they're playing. And then they choose the wrong things to watch also sometimes, you know. We feel it's just a harmless cartoon, but this cartoon may have wrong messages.
Exactly.
So we have to oversee all these things before we even start giving them, in doses even. Like, for example, we feel now it's time for watching cartoon, maybe screen time, maybe 30 minutes or 1 hour, whatever. But we feel whatever he watches, it's okay. Islamic environment, like in Islamic Republic of Iran, it might be minimized, this kind of consequences, bad consequences. But what about the outside world?
Yeah.
What about in the West? We see that a unicorn even has a meaning.
Exactly.
Outside. It's just like threatening to a child. You know, like unicorns, wearing t-shirts of unicorns are in fashion. Wow. What is behind that? Wrong messages portrayed.
Yeah, the subliminary messages.
Exactly. And that's really something that you don't monitor about the child. So you have to really monitor. A lack of monitoring would spoil that Islamic home setting. So parents should not make this mistake of not monitoring their children.
Because right now when parents, they are tired or they feel like they want to have alone time or something like that, they'll say, "Now you know, lucky, you can keep the iPad now. You can do whatever you want." I guess also this kind of, because we are, unfortunately, we tend to get lazy fast or you get tired fast. We tend to leave the child now to do what they want. So I feel like this happens a lot, unfortunately, especially in our communities where they want to have their free time. They want to have... There has to be, now that you have a child, you have to commit yourself and do your job, you know, in the best way possible.
You have to commit. In fact, I find it more tedious to give something like this to my child because now I have to watch over.
Yeah.
But if an activity is given, like a coloring or things like that, and you know, like you oversee to that, even if I'm resting... Every 5 minutes I'll call out and see what is she doing and probably go to have a peek at her. And that's good. From a young age, she knows she's being watched. It feels even good to her, to a child, you know, that I'm given the support. And you shouldn't even make it so like a policeman kind of thing. You should say it in a very beautiful way, a subtle way that, you know, like you're not alone.
Yeah.
I'd love to see what you did.
It's like that's going to make us remember that as when we finish this period, that Allah is always watching us.
So yeah, that's right.
Will always make us remember that, you know, there is somebody watching us.
Yeah, that's a very good thing you mentioned, that we come to know, a child comes to know later on that my mom was always watching me, and now look, alhamdulillah, I've come what I've come to be, and I'm trying to even, you know, I've not got into any bad habits because of that, because of respecting and fearing her, and now I fear Allah because he's watching me all the more from all sides, right?
Exactly.
So, another thing is that, you know, usually when a boy or a girl comes to their teenage years and they start becoming more independent, they might do something privately that we don't even know of. Even if they appear to be so good outwardly, but because of lack of monitoring, you know, parents come to find out that, you know, some kind of evil habit in the children. For example, what he watches.
Yeah.
Na'udzubillah, if he watches the pornography. And then the parents come to find out how much it breaks the heart of the parents, right?
Mm.
And these are some mistakes that do happen because of not being taken seriously of monitoring the children. Even if they've reached their teens, to do it in a very subtle way, like take for them something to eat, even if they've closed their rooms. In fact, not giving them all that freedom to surf the internet.
Exactly.
Right?
That's very true. So we're just going to take a short break, and inshallah we'll continue this discussion after the break.
Ya muqiya al-khayrat, ya muqiya al-khayrat, ya muqiya al-khayrat.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, excessive blame causes the fire of obstinacy to flame.
All right, right, so you're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing. So we have been talking about how we have to instill this kind of an Islamic home setting and how it is important for us to be, you know, careful on what our children do. We have to try and monitor our children more, because they should always know that, you know, their parents are there and they're watching them, but not in a way that they should feel scared all the time.
Or interfered.
Yeah, right? Or interfered with. Yeah. So, yes.
Usually this phase comes about, you know, when they're feeling that they're interfered with, is when you leave them alone completely in their young age. Then when they grow up, they feel now, you know, now is the time that the parents feel threatened that maybe he'll do something or she'll do something privately now that he's grown up. You know, and they're facing their own challenges as they grow up. So let me see what they're doing. That's the time that feel interfered. But if you're watching them from a young age, they know that you're supporting them, with them, you're friends with them, you know, in a very respectable manner. So they wouldn't dare to do that. And they wouldn't need to do that also. Mm-hmm. But because they wouldn't have a lack in their hearts, a gap of a lack of attention in their hearts. They'll get all the attention in the young age, so they'd see no reason to do it.
Yeah.
And of course, you talk over such things, the such challenges that they face in school and from the outsider, whatever, the peers and things like that. So you talk over these things and very smartly you explain them and you tell them what are the disadvantage of certain behaviors that would ruin their lives.
Exactly.
You know,
and also
in the long
I feel
run.
Like from a young age, they shouldn't feel like they're always scared of you. We have to try and make them understand through our actions that, you know, what is really the right thing and what is not. Because so that when later on, they shouldn't feel like we have to do something because our parents are here.
Yeah.
It has to be done like naturally. They should want to do it because it's a good thing. This whole process of bringing up your child should be in such a way that the child will themselves feel like this is what is important, this is what is wrong for me to do, and I want to, you know, grow up as a healthy person. So what you instill into their minds, everything plays a part.
And the best, as I mentioned, is monitoring, but with love and precaution and in subtlety.
Yeah.
So that as they grow up, then they don't feel that you're interfering with them. They feel that this is the support that our parents are showing. And parents would notice that they don't have to put a video camera in their rooms or something.
Yeah.
But they would just notice that how the children behave and how they use their free time. And they would also feel, you know, relaxed that certain times can be given, like, of privacy to my child, because they would know for certain.
And to show them maybe you trust them, yeah, and you know that they won't be...
But it comes after an age of monitoring a
exactly,
lot, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because certain ages are so, like, sensitive that you have to be with them and you have to train them and you have to occupy them such that they don't get deviated in their thoughts.
Exactly.
Because Shaitan is an open enemy after all.
Yeah, definitely. Inshallah, thank you very much. And inshallah that we will be able to, you know, try and read and learn more how we can, you know, administer these things in the right way. Inshallah.
Right. Inshallah.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. So, dear audience, thank you for joining us on the program. And if you have any questions, comments or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, parstoday.com. Inshallah, until the next program, be amanillah and God bless you all.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life. A complete way, it's a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet
Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.